Come up on a tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest will be Kathy Lynn Che, author of the new poetry collection, Split. This is a winner of the 2012 Kundiman Poetry Prize, and it's published by Ellis James Book. It's a fantastic collection of poetry from a very young, brilliant new poet. So stick around, and we will talk to her on Poetic License. We have my very good friend, Azucena Dominguez, and she's going to share some memories with us. I'm glad to be back in the studio because even though you may not know this, I was on a long journey. This summer, I traveled from Los Angeles to Madrid, and from Madrid to Oviedo, Spain, and from Oviedo back to Madrid, and then from Madrid to El Paso. I was in El Paso for a couple of, 4 or 5 days, and then I flew from El Paso to London, then from London to Madrid, and then from Madrid back to El Paso, and the summer isn't even over yet. I've been traveling a lot, mostly professional reasons. Like, I went to Oviedo because I did a reading at a conference there. I read from my book, Hotel Juarez. It went very well. It was quite an experience. And then I'm the director of an online MFA in creative writing, and we now have a low residency option. So I took 5 of the writers in our program, and we went to London, and we wrote, and we attended plays. And then we went to Madrid, and we wrote, and we attended plays, and it was just an incredible time, and I think, quite frankly, I'm in love with Madrid. You thought I was going to say a person's name, huh? I'm in love with Madrid. It's a city that I really understand, and so I'm probably going to go back, maybe right after this show. I'm going to go back, and you may never hear from me again. It's what I do. I'm very peripatetic. I can't seem to stay in one place. I remember when I was a kid, my parents used to have to lock the door, the front door, because I'd always try to leave, and I would be wandering down the streets, and they would have to run out and get me. And I guess now I'm pretty much the same way. If there is a week or two where I could do something, I usually do it. I go. I've been a lot of places. There's some places I haven't been, but talk to me in a year and I will probably have been to those too. But today I am content to be in El Paso, Texas, with my awesome producer, Norma Martinez, who is behind the glass right now. And about to talk to Kathy Lynn Che. So stick around. Kathy Lynn Che is a Vietnamese-American poet from Los Angeles. She has received awards from the Asian American Literary Review, the Center for Book Arts, the Fine Arts Work Center at Provincetown, Kundiman, the Lower Manhattan Cultural Council's Workspace Residency, and Poets and Writers. She is founding editor of Paper Bag. Kathy, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on this beautiful book, Split, with Ellis James Books, which I have to inform our listeners, if they don't already know, is certainly one of the best independent publishers of poetry in the country. Wow. How did you get Ellis James Books to publish this? I mean, it's a great book, but it must have taken a while.
It did take a while to write the book, and so what I did was I sent out 2 different contests, and for this one it was the Kundiman Poetry Prize, specifically for Asian American poets, and it's an annual prize in partnership with Ellis James Books, and how they do it is the cooperative board votes, you know, on, they whittle it down, and out of this group of finalists, the cooperative board selects, and in conjunction with the Kundiman Artistic Board. So they picked my book in 2012. So.
And that's no small thing to get to win the Kundiman Prize, because, I mean, it's pretty prestigious. And congratulations. There's been a lot of great poets who have come out of that series.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened when you found out.
When I found out, I started yelling And then I ran around the kitchen because I don't have a huge apartment. I was living in Brooklyn, and I just sort of ran, zipped up and down the living room, and then around the kitchen table in the kitchen, maybe like three times, doing kind of like train noise. It was really funny.
When I first met you, it was at a reading you organized in Houston about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And you had already graduated with your MFA. You were working with poets and writers, and you were sending your stuff out. And even then, I got this sense that, wow, this person is really committed to poetry. I mean, you went the contest route, which means that you sent it out and you paid money every time you sent it out. Why did you choose that route as opposed to trying to just get a publisher to come out with it?
In poetry, the contest route is a kind of primary way of trying to get published, but I mean the only other ways are sort of querying, you know, publishers and things. And I really did sort of at the time feel like the contests were a way for me to just continue working on the manuscript, continue improving it. You know, there were hard deadlines that really helped me to just define for myself something to work toward. You know, I didn't feel ready to sort of query publishers yet because I was still sort of in process of working on it. Even though I thought that the manuscript that I had sent to Alex James was strong, I felt like it was still a work in progress. And in fact, they didn't ask for a final draft until a year and some change later, so I had about a year to continue to work on it. So it actually ended up being about a third different. I took out some poems and I added a lot of new material that I had written in that year because I felt like I could fill it out.
Well, I certainly admire your patience and your persistence, you know, because, I mean, I think a lot of times new writers just want to get published and they'll take anything, print on demand, and, you know, any kind of publisher that'll just take it immediately. And I certainly admire that. I've known poets who have entered contest after contest after contest and have spent thousands and thousands of dollars, and then finally they hit. But it seems like you didn't really have to wait that long. How many contests did you enter before you hit?
I'm not really certain. Maybe anywhere between 6 and 20. I have no idea. I really don't know.
Wow.
I didn't expect very much. My very first one I sent to was probably, and it was an open call for manuscripts, and that was in 2010. So it took me about 2 years, I think. And I just was sort of putting together a manuscript, and it kept evolving and changing.
All right. I finished my first book of poems about 6 months ago.
Oh,
and
it's
my first, and I'm starting to, I'm in love with poetry now, and it's because of people like you. You know, I read your book and I'm blown away and I go, oh my gosh, this is what I love. This is what I, you know, and of course the radio show helps that I talk to so many good poets, but, if I look at it 6 months ago and I look at it now, it's so different.
Mm-hmm.
It's so different. And so I imagine I can see the evolving of it. Now let's get to the book itself. Split is, it's a fantastic book. As beautiful as it is, I love the language. And I'll tell you a little bit about what I love about the language in a second. But it's also an incredibly painful book. It has a lot to do with sexual abuse, sexual exploitation, rape. Was it a difficult book for you to write, and did you know it was going to be so thematically unified under that theme?
Well, thank you, first of all. And the first question, was it a difficult book for me to write? I think in some ways when I first started talking about the topic of sexual abuse, it was difficult. It was less difficult to write it, but more difficult to expose it to other people, because I felt exposed, and I felt very vulnerable, and I didn't know how these poems would be received. And this was when I was in my MFA program, and I was in a workshop with Sharon Olds, who created for us a space where I really, for whatever reason, I just felt that this is the most important poem that I'm writing right now, and I want to bring it to workshop. And I felt, while I felt apprehensive, I felt some both safe and a deep desire to sort of bring it to other people, even though, even if as it was frightening, you know. And the book, my very first incarnation of this manuscript was, it had none of these poems in it, really, or maybe two of these poems, and the rest were about my family and their stories of the Vietnam War. And so that became an entire manuscript with a few of these poems, maybe two of these poems in there. It wasn't until I just started, I'm trying to think what started me along this path, but I think what it was is when you met me in Houston, I was actually living in L.A. on a fellowship for poets and writers. So I had returned home. I returned home to live with my mom again in my childhood home, and I was staying in my childhood bedroom, and I think that place drew up these memories, and I was reading a variety of different texts that were very inspiring in the sense that formally I was very interested in what they were trying to do. So I was reading Martha Collins' Blue Front, and she had these definition poems. So I started doing these imitations, and everything came out in a kind of fever, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. I just turned over and whatever came out. And for whatever reason, the topic that kept coming back to me was talking about, you know, childhood sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a lot of these poems, and I didn't know what to make of them, but I knew I really loved them. For whatever reason, I really loved them. I didn't know if they were clean enough or polished enough or anything like that, but they, for the most part, after I revised them, became the entire first section of the book, and then I wrote to kind of round it out, some of the last section of the book. So it became the frame. So it was one thing, and then it became something entirely different.
You know, I have a lot of poets on the show, and I usually ask them whether or not they knew what the book was going to be about, or did they just write poems and, you know, as they put them together, they see the themes. And it seems like most of them answer that it's the latter. They write poems and write poems and write poems, and then they see the themes, and then they go, oh, that's what it's about. And that sounds like maybe that happened to you?
I did at a certain point want to streamline. What I mean to say is I was very interested in writing poems that talk to each other, mm-hmm. and I wanted to continue while I was writing on this topic to keep at it and look at these memories, these feelings, and also other ideas around sexual abuse. Like, I was very interested in definitions at the time. I was very interested in the ways that the media has portrayed these, rape or sexual violence in any way. And I was interested in looking at psychoanalysis to see sort of, you know, how people have defined these issues and have, like, looked at it, and because it's such a important part of how people think of sexual abuse and therapy. So I was reading books kind of around these topics and from many different angles. So there is a way that I was intensely focused. I intensely focused my reading and my writing in order to kind of unpack and explore and explode what I knew and what other people know about the topic.
Right. We're talking to Kathy Lynn Che, author of Split, A New Book of Poems, which is the 2012 Kundiman Poetry Prize winner. I'd like to ask you a little bit about your process. First of all, poem to poem, how do you start a poem? And when you write a poem, you enter into it, how often are you surprised about what happens in the poem?
I think my process changes often, but most recently I would say that I begin with listening for a line and mm-hmm. just sort of, it's like automatic writing, just letting the next line come and letting the next line come and just kind of completing that flow, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that flow is done, then I just stop. And then, you know, the next time that I approach it, you know, the same thing happens. But in order to sort of, for me, in order to have that automatic writing, have some kind of spine, I often read toward the things that I hope to write. So, for example, in Split, I was very interested in psychology and psychoanalysis. So I was reading Freud, I was reading Maslow. And then I had, at some point, I invented this doc character, this kind of a psychoanalyst type character as somebody to address. And after that, I would do this automatic writing, but it was always addressed to the doctor character.
Oh, wow.
So so I wrote poem after poem addressed to this doctor character. So there's a long poem at the end. It actually was just, the long poem is many of these different iterations of the individual poems sort of stitched together.
And as you're writing a poem, as you're following the language into the poem, I think that when we do that, we need an anchor, something that pulls us back, you know, because I think if we follow the language without an anchor, it just can go anywhere, and you just have a bunch of language, you know, which, you know, isn't necessarily bad, but an anchor. And it sounds like that doctor, that imaginary doctor, is the anchor that keeps bringing you back, keeps bringing you back. So the language, it's like Lorca says that Duende fights against form. And I think that we need that fight against form. But on the other hand, we can't let Duende take over entirely. You know, whether Duende is language or Duende is, you know, a dark spirit or whatever Duende is, we need to anchor it a little bit and, you know, bring it back, bring it back. And another thing I notice about your poems, there are a lot of and I'm going to use this term, and maybe it's not even an accurate term, and that you can help me find a better one, but... there are a lot of unconscious rhyming in this, in your poems, and not hokey end rhymes, you know, but there's a lot in the music that it oftentimes goes back to the same sound. So the repetition of sound, you know, rhyme by any other name, to anchor you back into the poem, to pull you back in.
I would say my primary mode when I write, the primary thing that, what is most present for me when I write is image. So images are the thing that come to me most loudly. And then I think sound is secondary for me.
Wow.
But I do feel that oftentimes things like rhyme, they are an unconscious, like you mentioned, kind of anchor that draws me back into the poem. And I actually have to be kind of careful about it because...
Oh, absolutely.
Even that kind of long poem that I mentioned, it runs a big risk of being too sing-song and too rhymy. And I have to sort of weigh out when I need to break it and when I will let it stand. Because I think when letting it stand, if I, upon revision, decide that, you know, that sing-song effect actually works for the poem, and there's... certain moments when it refers back to childhood, so there's a kind of lullaby effect to it that I found satisfying, so I kept it in. And at other times, maybe it's just too much, you know, so I'm consciously looking and listening and hearing, you know, mostly I assess it, you know, during revision.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That's the fun of revision. If the form is too tight, we loosen it. If it's too much, you know, as a fiction writer and now as a poet, you know, I find that that in revision I have to loosen rhymes, you know, that were unconscious, and I go, okay, no, that's just way too much. Like I did one that was, I rhymed hanky with frankly, and I thought, no, that's a little too much. I got to, you know, I got to change the language a little bit. But as I was writing, as I was following the impulse, you know, of that which brought me into the poem, I found myself doing that. And yeah, the revision, you loosen it up. You let the form loosen a bit. I've never felt at any point in this book that it got too sing-songy. It was musical. And that's why, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that you put image first, because your poetry seems to be music creating image as opposed to image set to the music of the language.
That's a mysterious part of the writing process, because you can't really separate out those impulses.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I do think that they both work in concert,
right.
But I think that primarily, because some people are very much driven by music. I think I'm driven by the image, and the music kind of accompanies her image set forth. And I think the images, the way that they kind of build and recur, is similar to the way a song sometimes happens. So I think that it's not, you know, it's, your assessment is not, it does ring true to me as well.
Yeah, and also I think there's just so many ways of articulating of how we enter into the poem, but the important thing is that we enter into it and we let the poem surprise us, we let the poem take us to where the poem wants to go, for lack of better explanation. And your poetry is, nothing seems forced or heavy-handed in this book, and I see why it won the prize. It's a beautiful book, and thank you so much for coming on the show. And we have this segment, Poem of the Week. We always read a poem every week, and if we have a poet, we ask the poet to read a poem. So I was hoping you would be able to share one of them with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'll read Pomegranate. Pomegranate. I open my chest and birds flock out. In my mother's garden, the roses flare toward the sun, but I'm an arrow pointing back. I am Persephone, a virgin abducted. In the underworld, I starve the season while the world wilts into the ghost of a summer backyard. My hunger open and raw. I lay next to a man who did not love me, my body a performance, his body a single eye, a director watching an actress, commanding her to scintillate. I was the clumsy acrobat. When he came, I split open like a pomegranate and ate six of my own ruddy seeds. I was the whipping boy. Thorny barbed wire wound around a muscular heart. Thank you.
That was Kathy Lynn Che reading her poem Pomegranate from the new book Split, just out by Alice James Books, one of our best publishers of poetry in the United States. Kathy, congratulations on a book, and thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much for having me.
My name is Azucena Dominguez, and I'm a retired mathematics school teacher. I taught for 36 years, and now I'm a want-to-be writer. And I am part of the Tumble Words Writing Project. So my story was inspired by a trip I took to Aspen, Colorado. Only one time in Aspen. In 1976, my friend Sally and I went to Aspen, Colorado, during a four-day weekend that we as teachers had in October. I had never been there, and a friend who dated Sally and was working there had told us that we could stay at his cabin, and we were really excited as we heard that many movie stars went there. We left early on Thursday morning, and by the time we were getting to the Colorado-New Mexico border, it had started snowing. Apparently, it was their first snow, and we didn't know that the higher we went, the harder the snow was coming down. We got to Leadville, Colorado that evening, and we had taken turns driving as we had never seen so much snow. It was a little scary because it was very slippery. We found out that they would not let us continue to Aspen as the roads had been closed because of the heavy snow and ice. We tried telling them that a friend was waiting for us that night and that we needed to get to Aspen, but the state police said no, and to wait until morning. So basically, we were stranded in Leadville and had to stay at a motel. In the morning, we were told that only if we bought chains for the car's tires would we be allowed to continue to Aspen. We spent half a day at a shop getting the chains installed, so we got to Aspen late in the evening and quite scared as we had some slipping and sliding on the road several times. Patrick was waiting for us and very worried. We were so tired that we decided just to go to dinner and not go sightseeing until the next day. Patrick took us to a little pizza place that was well known, and we had a quick dinner. On our way back to his cabin, Patrick told us that the night before, he let a hitchhiker named Jim spend the night in his cabin as it was too cold outside and he felt sorry for the guy. He said Jim had left, so he didn't expect him to come back. I was to sleep on a sofa bed in the front room, and Sally was going to be in Patrick's bedroom, of course. Extremely tired, we didn't even want to visit anymore, just go to bed. I don't know what time it was, as I was fast asleep, when I feel something freezing cold poking my face. I open my eyes, and there's this big guy, dressed like a biker, pointing a rifle right at my face. He is shouting, "Where is he? Where is he?" I am so scared and half asleep, and I ask, "Who? Who?" He yells, "Where is Jim? I'm going to kill him." I exclaim, "I don't know Jim. I'm visiting Patrick." He pushes me with a rifle and says, "You are hiding him. Where is he?" Patrick comes running into the front room, and the biker points the rifle at him. The biker repeats that he is looking for Jim and is going to kill him. Patrick tries to calm him down and tells him that Jim is not in the cabin, but had stayed the night before. The biker says that he played a game of pool with Jim at one of the local bars and that Jim cheated him. Patrick finally convinces the guy to leave without hurting anyone. As he leaves, we memorize his bike's license plate, and Patrick calls the police. Through most of the drama, Sally is sleeping, which is probably for the best. While we are waiting for the police, I run to the restroom and almost trip with a man's body on the floor, and I scream. Patrick comes right away, and it turns out the guy on the floor is Jim. I think that he is dead, but Patrick says that he probably came in through the window, all drunk, tripped, and passed out. The police come and get all the details, and they go ahead and take Jim. They mention that the biker is a Hell's Angel and would have probably killed Jim. So it was a blessing that Jim was passed out, or he may have lost his life that night. Sally and I were not expecting all that drama, and I certainly had never had a rifle pointed at my face before. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience that I didn't want repeated. And we didn't see any movie stars. For Words on a Wire, I'm Azucena Dominguez.
I'd like to thank my guest, Kathy Lynn Che, for joining us on this week's show. And I'd also like to thank my very good friend, Azucena Dominguez. I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining me. And don't forget, we're here every Sunday at noon on KTEP. And don't forget, the next book you read may save your life.
I'm up on the tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope. One side's hate and one is hope.